This is part of the series of the laws of life, using the tarot to investigate various laws of life. We have our question tonight is, what is the divine law of monadic return, and how can aspirants best harness it? You may not have heard of the law of monadic return, but then again, you probably haven't tried to take your monad back to the grocery store for return. Yes, refund. But it is one of the laws of divine life and a very important one. Once you understand this law of monadic return, you have a much better understanding of what's going on in life. And so this is key and essential. I've shuffled the cards and laid out the spread, and we have as our starting point the star, number 17 in the major arcana, right side up. The counterpoint is the Eight of Rods, right side up. The challenge is the Queen of Pentacles, right side up. The purpose is the King of Swords, upside down. The King of Swords, upside down. The endowment is the Hermit, upside down, and that's number 9 in the Major Arcana. The Destiny is the Sun upside down, and that's number 19 in the Major Arcana. So that becomes a 1. The 17 in the star became an 8. And then we have the Pillar of Revelation. We have the Page of Cups right side up in the position of the real question. We have in the position of unseen forces the Four of Pentacles upside down. We have in the position of spiritual ideal, the Knight of Cups, right side up. And the culmination is the Two of Pentacles upside down. So we have 5 upright and 5 reverse cards. We have 3 majors all in a row here, from endowment to starting point to destiny, the Hermit, the Star, and the Sun. We have 1 sword, being the the King of Swords. We have 1 rod, being the 8 of Rods. We have 2 cups, being the Page of Cups and the Knight of Cups in the Pillar of Revelation. And then we have 3 pentacles. So we have 3 majors and 3 pentacles. We have the star at the starting point is the number 8, and so is the 8 of Rods. So there's a unity there, as there often is. And that's basically it, except to observe that we have a full house. We have a king, the King of Swords. We have a queen, the Queen of Pentacles. We have a knight, the Knight of Cups. And we have a page, the Page of Cups. So we have king, queen, page, and knight, one of each. So between those and the 3 majors, we end up with only 3 other cards, the 8 of Rods, the 4 of Pentacles, and the 2 of Pentacles. Okay, let's start from the beginning, the starting point, the star. As you know, the star, there's a brilliant star with all different kinds of red and lavender colors and blues and so on up in the sky. And directly beneath it is a phoenix rising up toward it, rising from the earth up toward the star, almost touching it, and replicating the same colors but in a different design. And then down beneath that, we have all those jagged edges of representing the residue of ancient evil, plus some rather Art Deco sculpted stones next to the on either side of the wording, the star. So we have here all 3 levels of life represented. We have the Father, the Son, and matter, or intelligence, Father, Son, intelligence, Father, Son, and Mother aspect. And what we have here is the phoenix representing the personality that incarnates and is reborn after it dies. It reconfigures itself. And when it dies, it bursts into flame, and the flame is reabsorbed into the into its essence, the star, and then it's reinvested in the new personality. And that pretty well sums up the idea of monadic return. We have a monad, the father, that is a point of that is indivisible. It's a point, a spark within the life of God. And the monad, seeking experience, creates a soul. And then the soul, seeking experience on the physical plane, creates a series of personalities. And we know that. This is new to all of us taking this series. But what we don't usually think about is the relationship of the monad to the soul, and then the relationship of the monad to the body in which it is an atom, a spark, the body of God. So the monad slightly differentiates itself by focusing it in the experience of the soul, and the soul differentiates itself by focusing in the experience of the personality. So we have these three levels of energy which describe human life. The level of the monad is the level of essence, which comes from the Latin for esse, which is being, life. So it is the life. And then it creates a soul, which becomes the essence to the personality. Most of what we study in our classes is how to return and learn to focus in the monad, in the soul, and the soul eventually returns to the monad. Almost nothing explores the law of monadic return, which is the force that draws the monad back into full attunement with God, which it never really leaves. So that's what we're focusing on here, the law of monadic return, which means that there is a connection, a direct line connection between the personality and its activities and its goals, the soul and its activities and experiences, and the monad, and then a connection on beyond that with God. And that's where it gets arcane here. So we have established the inner and the outer nature of our life. And we know that primarily from the soul incarnating through personalities, but in fact there's another such sequence where the inner is the monad and the outer is the soul. And it is through the monad that we have our tie that I describe as cosmic fabric. We're cut from cosmic fabric. It's the monad that is cut from cosmic fabric. And it imparts a fragment of its life into the soul, which in turn imparts a fragment of its life into the personality. And through a long period of experience, the soul reabsorbs the experiences of the personality, the lessons learned, and the monad learns to reabsorb the wisdom and love gained by the soul, and then the monad enriches the life of God with that. Okay, in doing this, the idea of the monadic return is that the monad itself is an emanation of divine life that seeks outer experience and then returns to the central core, God, and brings back with it what it has learned. That's the basic thesis that we saw established in Poe's essay Eureka, Eureka by Edgar Allan Poe. The outward emanation producing a return and then the enrichment of the whole. Now, there's some interesting things about the star here, and that is that the phoenix bird is, well, in a sense, this card sums everything up because it talks about the star, and the star is a heavenly body. And yet the phoenix through the principle of resonance, brings the life of its inner essence down into the physical plane, where then it gradually, over many, many eons, millions of years, gradually interacts with the substance of the physical plane and redeems it. It purifies it, it uplifts it, it eliminates, it cleanses the ancient patterns of evil and elevates them. See? So this is the process here that's being described. The notion here is that the energies of the soul are able to interact with the energies of the physical form, and constantly the movement is upward. No matter how overwhelmed we may think we are or feel that we are, no matter how much we may feel that the forces of earth have dragged us down to the pits, the strength of the soul within us, its joy, its goodwill, its dignity, and so on, is able to redeem and reform just by interacting with it. And the more consciously we gain control of this process, the more we accelerate it. Okay, that sets us in motion, this whole reading, this whole exploration. Then we go to the counterpoint, the Eight of Rods. And here we have it pretty much in the abstract. We have eight rods, two sets of four, moving from, presumably, from left to right, from heaven to earth a little bit. And down below it is the barren earth, the barren, unenriched earth, symbolizing pretty much the way it was in the beginning. And so this emphasizes, this restates what we've just been talking about. The upper four rods represent the essential energies of life, those of the monad. The lower four represent our subjective energies, those of the soul, and the earth itself represents objectivity. And so we live in a world of appearances, of objective, seeming objective realities, but we're here because we're here. We have an impact through our character, our style, and our genius and our talent on everything around us. And through many long sequences of lives, we draw together the substance that we find around ourselves, physically, emotionally, and mentally, and we organize it. And so what we have to understand is, in order to understand the, comprehend the monad, we have to recognize that we are energy. We're not form. We live in a world of form, but we have the power to transform that form and transmute it into energy. And to through that presence, we leave an impact on everything around us. The more we're able to be overshadowed by spirit and express its actions in our actions, the more our interaction with life around us is benevolent. We draw to us friends, friendly people. We draw to us people we can work with. We draw to us conditions that we can cure and help. Just the confrontation of disease alone is a wonderful example. As we struggle to overcome our diseases and science learns to cure some of them, and we learn to invoke the ideal patterns of health from the soul, we gain control over and purify substance. All right, so we've set this in motion. We have the point and the counterpoint. And then we come up to the position of the challenge, which is the Queen of Pentacles. And the Queen of Pentacles is wearing a lovely outer cloak, a rich cloak of ermine or something like that. She stands for our ability to dominate the physical plane. Now, again, that's our goal, is to learn to dominate this. And one of the ways we learn it is simplicity itself, just by recognizing that there is a soul, that occasionally steps in and overshadows us and lifts us up when we are struggling and gives us creative insights and good ideas, just by recognizing that there is a soul and presuming that the soul has its own soul, the monad, we learn that we can focus our attention either in the physical level or in the emotional level, the mental level, or the abstract levels of mind, intuition, and spirit. And it may seem like, no, we can't. We can't just do that by deciding to look at this and repeating a mantra. We have to wait for the soul to transform us. Well, the soul will transform us, but it's through the repetition of trying to look at life from a higher perspective that we succeed. The key here is focus. If we believe ourselves to be a person of form and that there's nothing other than our physical body and when we die, that's it, that's all she wrote, then we're stuck in form. But if we comprehend even vaguely that there's something greater about us, that we're able to draw on our higher mind and intelligence to impose self-control on our own bodies and even on the environment around us to a degree, we begin to exercise that and develop a sense of dominion over what we're doing. And so we find ourselves alive in the physical world. We're meant to make the most of what is around us. The more we can organize and impact the environment around us, the more the soul is eventually able to take over the mechanism and express enlightenment directly. Through evolution, we gradually acquire the qualities of the monad and the soul and bring them down into the personality. So we develop a set of values. We aspire to the virtues of the soul. We attempt to commune with the Father, which is the monad. And there's that wonderful passage in John where the Christ is communing with the monad, the Father, and saying that he is coming to the Father and ask the Father to look over his disciples and those who have followed him. And that's a tremendous passage describing the monad. We cannot know either the soul or the monad without developing the intuition, which is what the feather on top of her hat indicates. But even without the intuition, simply by focusing in the very best within us, the highest level we can attain or aspire to, we develop the rudiments of self-control that let this process go forth. Then we come down to the purpose. And here we have the King of Swords. We've seen this fellow before. And being a king, he refers to mastery. We find our way back through, in terms of the return of the monad, through mastery. We master the mind, the heart, energy, talent, form, experience, health. All these things are opportunities for us to express mastery. Just as an artist expresses mastery of his craft, or a writer expresses mastery of his work, we can become a master of relationships. We can become a master of working with the animal kingdom through our relationship with pets or horses or what have you. And there's all these opportunities. The earth is filled with an abundance of opportunities where we can express this. The ability of somebody that works well with plants to love and nurture their plants is to the plant life, the person who does that is is like the monad is to us. And so there's all these different ways that we can become responsive to the work of the soul and behind that to the monad. And as we gain that control that we talked about in the Queen of Pentacles and learn to focus at higher and higher levels for our inspiration, we're not waiting till the end of time, you see, to bring the monadic return. The law of monadic return is that having invested itself into a soul and the soul invested itself in a series of personalities, there's a constant movement back towards the monad. And so there's a very practical application in our lives to this rather abstract theory of monadic return. We bring back to us, to the soul, to the spirit, that what we've learned of interacting with life on earth. And we bring back a greater sense of control and authority over ourselves, over other groups and other kingdoms of God. If you're a business person, you go out and you make deals with other people and get people to cooperate with you, and you establish various distribution routes or what have you, relations with other countries. All of this is an exercise of control and the distribution of authority. And that is the sort of thing, whether in a very small way or in a very grand way, we are able to demonstrate the authority of the monad. So this sets up the beginning thing, and then we come to our crossbar here. The endowment, we have the hermit, and the hermit is got his little lamp there. He's looking for truth and the inner qualities of life. He's investigating the archives and trying to find out what's there. Well, we seek the light within. And we begin by trying to find the light within ourselves. And when we make our first contact with the soul through meditative work and good works and charity and so on, we begin to find out that there's an enormous, a vast, vast abundance of ideas and wisdom and energy and so on. And the simple rule here is ask and it shall be given you. Seek and ye shall find. Every lifetime is an opportunity to seek out new dimensions that we haven't discovered before. We are masters on the journey. We can accelerate this journey at will. And that's really what the personality is capable of doing. Experiencing life, accelerating the process by trying to build the anacharana with the soul. One way of looking at the star card, our beginning point, is that phoenix is right directly underneath the star and is forming the anacharana, rising up toward it. Keep in mind the scientific principle that everybody who works with nature knows. Everything grows towards the sun. The plants out on our deck and wherever, they all, the trees lean one way because the sun comes in that way. And we grow toward the sun too. We grow toward the monad. The hermit is our capacity to focus our consciousness at higher levels than we recognize, use our imagination first, and then as we develop the intuition, use our intuition to discover all the wonderful qualities of life. And look where, you might think, well, look at all the crime and everything in the throughout the world and all the base people. I prefer to look at it this way. We know about harmony. We know about beauty. We know about goodwill. We know about forgiveness. We know about wisdom. Where did we discover these things? We didn't make these things up. They all exist in the archetypal levels of life because not just a few people, but many people have followed the example of the hermit and looked inward. We have developed contact to a greater or lesser degree with archetypal levels of life, with spiritual ideals, with qualities, with these inner forces. We have an understanding, a direct intuitive knowledge of our being, our essence. And this is the foundation that we're building upon. We have the capacity to focus our mind. It's the mind that does this. To focus our mind in such a way that we discover the first soul and all of its archetypes and qualities, and then the monad. The phrase, Father, I am one with thee, is a perfect example of a realization of the monadic force in our life. And then we can, from that, bring back with us the authority and the self-control to discipline ourselves and to discipline the environment around us, to discipline our health, to discipline our self-expression, and so on. Okay, now we come to the card of destiny, the sun, upside down, 19. And we have this radiant sun with a book down at the base, an open book. And the key here is not only the ebullience and the bursting, radiant explosion of energy, but the very fact that this is energy. The sun is the heart of our experience. Our nature is fire. And this is one of the things that we have to understand in order to grasp the full intent of the law of monadic return. When the personality dies, when the physical body dies, we say, from dust unto dust. The opposite end of that never gets stated, is the law of monadic return is, from fire we have come, to fire we return. Well, maybe that's the motto of the Great Council or something. I don't know. I'm sure on Babylon 5 they said that one or two, or maybe Star Trek. From fire we have come, to fire we return. And but this is the opposite end of the spectrum. The physical body ends up decaying and returning to the earth from whence we organized it. But what we achieve through long eons and even moment to moment as we go through life with an awareness of the monad, we return to its essential nature. That's what essential means, the essence. The essence of our being is cosmic fire. Fohat, if you run across that in the Alice Bailey books. Fohat. That's monadic energy. Solar energy is solar fire. And then down here on the personal level, we deal with fire by friction. Okay? And you all know what fire by friction is. It's when you get, when you rub a Boy Scout the wrong way and he goes burst into fire. or something like that. I may have that mixed up. But in any event, most of what we do is done the hard way, by fire, by friction. Things move slowly and we try this and we get opposition and we overcome the opposition and we achieve our goals by overcoming the friction. But the friction also helps us stay on course and keep us grounded. But what we are just at the beginning of learning is that we don't have to do everything by fire, by friction. We can learn to work with solar fire. And solar fire releases the pent-up energy of archetypal forces and applies it to help us organize and maintain our health, our talents, our creative opportunities, et cetera, our friendships. And so we learn to infuse solar fire into everything we do. our creative work, our responsibilities. Keep in mind the word responsibility simply means that we're learning to respond to some higher level of life, the soul, the monad. And that concept of responsibility is a way in which we participate and follow the law of monadic return. We're seeking to respond first to the soul and then to the monad that is greater than the soul. And literally every time we trace a word back to its source and understand its power, we are following the route of monadic return. We are following the path, connecting the dots from personality to soul to monad. And so it is out of the fire that all life emanates, and then it's back to the fire, to the central source, to the hub, to the inner nexus that we return with the fruits of our labors and experiences and everything that we've gained along the way. So we gain experience by going outward and then assimilate what we've learned by returning inward, bringing it back to our core, to our innermost source. And really, that's what life is all about. It's the outward expression, the impulse to incarnate, and then the impulse to return back to the monad. And the monad contributes to the life of God. Now, this is where it becomes interesting because, of course, then the question is, well, what about God? Why is God bothering to do all this? Is it just because he wants us to have these experiences? We could, in fact, as we know, he is utilizing our services as we help pursue the work of God to redeem life on earth, to make this planet a sacred planet. It's not quite there yet. There's a few lessons yet to learn. It can do it. We can help. So there is the larger concept here of what is the return, what does the monadic return mean to God? Well, it means that this planet, along with others, has been rescued and saved, elevated to a higher level. But we have to understand that what we call God is simply the being in whose ring past not we live and move and have our being. And it is a being within a larger ring past not, interreacting with other forces and essences, including astrological forces that we know about, including the rays, including various relationships with other constellations and so on, other divine experiments. This is beyond our ken. This is beyond our pay level, so to speak. But the bottom line of it is that our life operates within the sphere of divine life, which operates within the sphere of the greater divine life, the one about whom naught can be said. And so we have to keep in mind that much of what happens to us, we might think, oh my God, what have I done to deserve this? I must have killed babies in past lifetimes or something. I must have done something really horrible to deserve the difficulty I'm facing today, or yesterday, or tomorrow. And the answer really is no. Because if you've done the normal work of cleansing and purifying that a spiritual aspirant has done, the likelihood is you are far greater that you are responding to activities in the life of mass consciousness or the life of God himself, or maybe some force that's coming in from Leo, because we're in the middle of Leo here, And Leo makes us very sensitive and makes us very aware of our requirements and our responsibilities. And we may be misinterpreting this entirely. It may not be anything personal to us that is causing us some angst or anxiety. It is probably that we're focused too much in the physical plane and giving it far too much importance when we should be focusing, up periscope and focusing at a more spiritual level, trying to understand what it is incoming from Leo that we haven't yet figured out how to master. And you might say, well, we should have figured out how to master it. We've been going through Leo every year of our life now and for lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Well, that's not to say that the energies that are coming through Leo are exactly the same as they were a year ago or a year before that. They're related, but many of the energies of Leo or any other sign that bathe our consciousness, we don't even have names for. So how can we conclude that this is all our fault when we have to work with the substance at hand? It's certainly not our fault that dirt is dirty, or that stones are hard, or that rocks are rough, and that the law of gravity can be fatal if you step off the edge of a cliff. None of this is, but we still are here, and so part of control is that, and authority, learning these lessons is learning that we can learn to expand our control to work with these conditions of life better. I'm not talking about the rocks. I'm talking about the incoming energies of Leo or Cancer or whatever, that we don't even have any way of clearly defining except by experiencing them. So again, this is this essence of responsibility. The law of monadic return is that we must return to our inner essence, our innermost essence. We're designed to. We're designed to bring back all of this information. And therefore, as we look at the pillar of revelation, we need to come up with a whole new concept of what this means. And we start with the real question, the Page of Cups. And this is the page. So this is the lesson everybody needs to learn, whether they're masters or initiates or scum of the earth. The lesson that we need to learn is discernment. Are we going to pay attention to objective reality, what we call objective reality, or are we going to use our subjective awareness to dominate that, or are we going to go even further back to the core of impulse represented by those two flowers and tap the inner essence? So we have a choice in everything. Do we tap and define our life in terms of the objective reality, which probably stinks, according to our emotions anyway? Are we dominated by the objective reality? Are we focused in our subjective realization of the soul and its power? Or are we even able to call upon and tap the power of the Father, the monad? And so as we take our needs and redefine them, if we look at it objectively, we might say, well, this obstacle is just too big for me. I can't do anything about it. That would be objective. If we look at it and say, oh, well, I've handled problems like this before. The soul can certainly handle this. It knows things I don't know. That would be subjective. If we go even further and understand that deep within the essence of our being, we can control this outer event, then we are in a completely different frame of mind. This choice is ours. So this is why we learn detachment, to withdraw our attention from the fish in the cup and refocus it in the soul. Or even more to the point, refocus it in the monad, understanding that the soul itself is but an outer expression of our true divinity, which is essence, energy. And so we harness the power to grow, represented by the flowers, and we use it to dominate that which seems to overwhelm us. And this is the way we train our emotions first to not react to the outer life, and then train the mind to take control. So the question here, the real question is, who's in control? What controls our life? Is it the day-to-day unfoldment of events in Leo? Is it our capacity to invoke opportunity from the soul? Or is it indeed the essential fire of our innermost spirit, which is able to draw in energies from God itself? Okay, so that's the real question. And this is important. This ties directly back to the Hermit, where we talked about where we're focusing our attention. What level are we interacting with life at? Are we allowing the events of life to just overwhelm us, going with the flow? Are we in a kind of equilibrium at the level of the soul? Or are we aggressively trying to transform life by invoking the fiery energy of spirit, the monad? And so that's our real question. Then the hidden forces is the Four of Pentacles. It's upside down. And I see these two cards as almost the same card, but reorganized. Here, the Page of Cups is wasting a lot of energy by overrating objective life. All that red energy flowing down and the scatterbrained plumes of the head. Here, that same individual has organized the head, the heart, and the hands. And the head represents connection with the soul. The heart represents the illumination of our soul. The hands represent creative building. So this is how have we organized our plan of life? How do we cope with day-to-day? How do we draw opportunity in and integrate it into our essence? And you see, on either side of this individual is mass consciousness, these gray blobs, which in some decks are just trees. This represents mass consciousness, constantly there, surrounding us, impinging upon us, trying to drag us down with the weight of materialism. But because we've integrated the head, the heart, and the hands, and of course they're responsive to the soul and spirit, we are able to maintain a balance of equilibrium with mass consciousness. And in fact, we can now include elements of mass consciousness in our daily activity. It's what we've been working with in Walden Ultra. For those of you who are taking Walden Ultra, when we do our oral presentation, we've been trying to speak so that our words have an impact on all of mass consciousness throughout the country. And we're getting better at that. And there's much, much more that we can grow and develop in terms of that. And that's represented by the Four of Pentacles. The Page of Cups is a person who possibly is being overwhelmed by the sheer complexity of life. The Four of Pentacles is somebody that has brought in the order and mastery of the soul and the monad, and is disciplined, is completely organized, a force for peace on earth. All right, then we come to the spiritual ideal. We have the Knight of Cups. And again, the Knight of Cups has those two flowers behind him, just like the Page of Cups. So his motivation is constant. He's got the same motivation, but now he's busy pursuing the work of God. He also has the same feather of intuition at the top of his head as the Queen of Pentacles. So he's able to combine his devotion and dedication to service with intuitive knowledge here. And the ideal he represents, he symbolizes the phrase, "I must be about my Father's business. My Father is at work and I must attend to his work as well." So the question is, what impels us? Do we just react, like the Page of Cups, to the fish and tell fish stories for the rest of your life? Or are you impelled by the impulse to grow represented by the flowers? And what spiritual forces are we learning to express? Are we motivated by joy? Are we motivated by beauty? Are we motivated by dignity? Or do we struggle with our reputation, a sense of honor, fame? Do we struggle with trying to achieve success and the outer signs of abundance and prosperity? Or do we recognize that the real treasures are those that we have found within, and we busy ourselves with expressing them and sharing them, not necessarily as money, but more as sharing beauty with others, sharing humor and a higher perspective, sharing wisdom with others, and using this power, this immense spiritual force that is the basis of our being, to enlighten everything we do, to enrich the world around us. How much the real issue here is, how much of the Father are you able to express? That's a little bit different than saying, how much of the soul am I able to express? The soul links us back to the Father, but eventually we realize that the monad is the true source of our life. And so we return to the monad, we focus on the monad. Now, again, I want to go back and pick up this theme that I started talking about with the hermit, that it's a question of focusing. I may not have made myself completely lucid on this subject. What I am saying is, if we choose to focus as the soul, we will eventually do that. This is the principle that I teach on day one of the basic course. We may not have control of our emotions, but if we act as if we have control, if we act as if we were a loving, kind, generous, compassionate person, filled with joy and goodwill and humor, by repeating that action, acting as if we were, we eventually will create that habit. That's the power. See, and you might say, well, you're just imagining that. That's just idle imagination. But it's not, because the soul responds to it. It's a silent invocation. It's an invocation of the soul. I want to be like the soul. I want to be like Jesus. I want to be loving. I want to be joyful. I want to be dignified in what I do. And so I'm going to act as if I was. Now you can extend that to the monad. I'm going to act as if I could focus at the monadic level. Understanding my relationship with God. I don't have it yet. I'm not there yet, but I can act as if I did. And the more you do that, first of all, the more the authority and mastery of the monad will come into your life. But secondly, and even more importantly, the more you will be responding to the monad, responding to the soul, and that is the law of monadic return. Our contribution to this is our sense of responsiveness, our responsibility, our capacity to say, I don't understand how this works, but I know that at the heart of my being, I will find God. And I want to activate that divine force so that it expresses itself through me in all that I do. So that's acting as if. That's the same as being about my Father's business. And then that leads us to our final card here, the culmination. And we have the Two of Pentacles. And the Two of Pentacles here is the key, contains the key to individuality, the secret of individuality. Here's the inner and the outer. And the individual is embracing both the inner and the outer dimensions of life, fronting the ocean of life. And as we learn to yoke the inner and the outer, we're not trying to escape the physical plane. We're not trying to denigrate the physical plane. Far from it. The last thing we want to do is curse the difficulties of life, because that just makes them bigger. It just gives energy to what we disapprove of. So we don't want to curse evil. We don't want to complain about it even. We want to recognize that it's here. It's part of the ancient patterns of evil that we've been sent to transform. And so here's our opportunity. And as we learn to transform them and bless them, then we gain more and more skill in doing this, and we yoke the inner and the outer. And we reveal them to be at one. And this is what it means to redeem the planet Earth, to work with the plant kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, to see within each of these those elements of materialism that hold them back, and then to act with our knowledge of the sun, the knowledge of spiritual energy within us, the essence of our being, to release the impulse to grow within plants, animals, minerals, whatever we interact with. Okay, I have pretty much covered the waterfront. I hope this is becoming clear. The point that one of the underlying principles here is that to read a quote from the Tibetan, ever the potent force of electrical energy, Fohat, will offset the more lethargic vibration of solar fire. It's amazing even to think of solar fire as being lethargic, because it's the sum of wisdom and intelligence from our perspective. But he says, ever the potent force of electrical energy will offset the more lethargic vibration of solar fire, and solar fire itself, in due time, will negate the efforts of fire by friction. So, by working at the highest level we possibly can, the level of the monad, even if it's only in our imagination or our invocations, we are releasing monadic energy to work with solar fire to stir up and enlighten physical form, the energies of fire by friction. And this is an ongoing process. Again, don't focus on what is yet to be accomplished in your life or in the life of humanity. Focus on what has been accomplished in your life and the life of humanity. And to the degree that you have discovered joy, harmony, goodwill, order, peace, and can talk intelligently about these things, when you first stepped into a human form, these were totally unknown. There was no language for them. There was no concept of them. And so the refinement that you individually and humanity as a whole has undergone is immense. And it gives us a clue as to the power of monadic energy, the essence of life. Okay, I'm going to stop there and entertain comments and questions.
Carl, an image that came to my mind, you had mentioned a few weeks ago about a movie, The Golden Child, and I had never seen it. And I watched it one night, and as you were talking tonight, that image kept popping up because I kept thinking of this little innocent child who was exposed to this violence, and he was so much more advanced than you would imagine. And, you know, he took his little finger and just touched, and the energy and the light. I mean, we were talking about the movement to the monad, from the monad, and that last thing that you were just talking about, you know, to act as if. This little child, and he is acting with all this authority.
Right, and that's a good allegory. Of course, it's not literally true, but the allegory is that there are no limits from our point of view, there are no limits even to solar energy, but for God's sake, there's no limits on what Fohat can do, what the energy of the monad can do. And so our connection with that is not based on what we find on Earth. It's what we bring with us into our life, our skills, our talents, our little kit box. And obviously, in that particular allegory, the golden child had brought it all with him. And he spontaneously knew how to handle the brutes that were there guarding him. And so by the use of his mind, he would crumple up the Pepsi can and make a little dancing man figure that amused the brute watching him. Didn't amuse his boss, who proceeded to stamp on the can. But in any event, that's a good example of an allegory. What we're talking about here is where life has no limits. And at least none that fit our practical definition. And the reason why we can say that is there are no limits because it's abstract. And that's one of the things that this reveals to us. If we understand, if we go back to the Page of Cups and understand that our physical life exists within the context of the soul, and the soul itself exists within the context of the monad. And the monad is an integral part of God. And God exists within the context of the one about whom not can be said. And gosh knows what we would call the one about whom not can be said exists within the life of. You see, we are a life within a life within a life. And the only thing that holds us back from releasing that energy and using it effectively in our life is our own sense of limitation, our own sense of, I can't do this, or our own sense of, I don't understand this. Those are the limits we put on ourselves. If we at least say, I don't know how to do this, but I know God can do this, I know the soul can do this, I know somewhere in the universe the answer exists, and I'm going to invoke it and wait patiently until I'm ready, but I will act as if I have this knowledge all along, then remarkable things will happen. But we're the one that controls this. If we poo-poo it and say, nah, it'll never happen, it'll never happen. But the moment we say, that I've got a glimpse of it, and I'm heading for the glimpse, then we can learn to integrate that new energy into our consciousness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I was just thinking that when we started taking your classes, even the thought of becoming one with the soul was, it was an outrageous notion. And here, that seemed like, yep, that's what we're working towards. you know, at this point, and you're talking about the monad, and it makes it seem more doable.
Well, of course.
I guess we just know that there's always something beyond. We reach there, and once you start getting closer to one step, you know there's another one.
Yeah.
And you can work with that. Now, I'm sitting there, and halfway through I was thinking, this is so exciting, and whenever you talk about these laws, you know, and I'm listening, it's amazing, but it's like, yes, of course, this is doable. And then you go and try to put it into daily life, and you're getting pulled down by some of this other gross energy rather than listening towards the sublime. But that's it. It's your focus. It's keeping the eye on that goal and then going beyond it to the next goal.
Right. And understanding that life exists within a larger life, within a larger life, within a larger life. And so you don't want to put any limits on what can happen. And we have the capacity to control our health, to control our life expression, to control our opportunities, to draw in new opportunities, to gather organized energy. And we shouldn't let the appearance of limitation sabotage our efforts.
I remembered at one time you saying not to give up because sometimes you're closer to the goal than you ever realize. And that's stuck in my mind. We don't know at times how close we are.
Sure. Let me put it this way. If you can define the obstacle, you can define the solution. If you can define the obstacle, you can look beyond the obstacle and see the solution. Okay, anything else? Well, I thank you all. That's it for this one, and we'll do this again in a couple of weeks. Thanks. Good night.
Good night.